Myrna is in the house with Lou's Local Lures. I want to welcome him. I see that you have a cigar in your pocket. That's a wonderful thing. And we can sit back and talk history now. I mean, I hear that Rick tells me that you are numero uno when it comes to history in this area.
Well, I have to commend, first off, Mike Colangelo and his People and Places of Rome. That's how I think Mike has like 16,000 followers now. And when I moved back to Rome, I had left from 1982 to about 2012. I decided to get back into my roots and go into being a history buff, I guess you could call it, part-time. And that's where it's taken me, mainly because with Mike's postings on Facebook, there's been a number of people who will post different things from time to time. I like looking them up and seeing what's going on further. And before we go into that, Rocco, a couple of the things that I brought with me.
Sure.
This cigar in my pocket is for you.
Oh,
oh yes.
You.
Oh, yes, you have.
Oh, my.
Of course.
Well, thank you. I smoked this at home if I wanted to. I might go home and do it this morning.
And there you go. And then the other thing, I hit you and Rick early this morning. We're talking about the original WKAL, and this is how I dive into things. I happened to find a clip of the original WKAL dedication that was posted in the Sentinel, November 26, 1946. The original KAL went on the air November 25th, 1946 at 2 p.m.
Really?
Yeah, and that's the
Rick was there.
And those are the types of things that I delve into, and of course I'm going to leave this little clip with you.
Oh, thank you.
And a lot of it has to do with how I guess if I take the lead, how I get into it is the wonderful folks at Jervis Library. I have to give, I think it's Lisa Matt, she's the director there. I have to give them a lot of credit. They recently digitized all of the Rome Sentinels, and I mean we're going back into the late 1800s. So now, if you're local, it only works if you're local. You can go to the library. You can't do it online from your home. You can't use your Mid-York Library System card from home to get into the system. If you physically go to the Jervis Library and you have your library card, you can log in to one of the computer labs and get into the digital archive of the Sentinel. And it is a searchable archive, which makes pulling up things of this nature much easier. Many of us use, and this is how I got my start with Mike's People and Places of Rome. I got my start using FultonHistory.com, which a lot of people are familiar with, but a lot of people don't really understand the search functions that are needed to find particular information. And I have become quite good at searching that particular site and finding what I need in a fairly short amount of time when I have some spare time, because I do have a full-time job.
I got to tell you that I'm looking at this article. Rick, you got to hear this, because you know how this business has changed over the years. Now, I want you to listen. This is 1946. The station was 250 watts, which nowadays gets you like down the street. I mean, everybody else would step all over you. But at the introduction for the station was the president, of course, of the corporation, Mayor Shantz of Rome, Mayor Golder of Utica, Mayor Burns of Oneida, Albert Tully of the Rome Building Council, A.H. Pearsall, Rome Chamber of Commerce, Miss Helen Wood, General Manager of WIBX, Walter Bly, President of WNDR in Syracuse. Nowadays, we're busy trying to throw hand grenades at each other's stations. And all these people came to welcome the competition in 1946.
Very interesting that all those the people that were competing in a way would actually be there. Yes.
250 watts, was that the standard then?
I don't know. Now, this is 1946. So we'd have to go back. I think that even for 1946, Rock, I think that was a low-power station. It went up from there. Eventually, they got to quadruple their power. But right at the very beginning, maybe very well that they did it that way.
Thank you, Lou. Thank you very much for that. That's we'll get that in a frame on the wall, definitely.
No different than the. Didn't you ask me about the Rome Electronics? I had. Furnished.
Yeah, you sent me a thing of our original building, which was pretty. That was the first of the three.
That was part of the condemnation proceedings back in the 70s. Yeah, and I believe again through my research, I think I had come across 70 or 80 buildings that had reports similar to the one that I had sent over to you. But that's the kind of the nature of things that I do, and especially like I was alluding to with the library. Now we can, local residents can go into the library, sit at a computer, and they do admit to the computers being somewhat of a dinosaur era. So the search function can take a while, but even as recently as this past week, about a week ago, or on Saturday it could have been, I was able to go in there, and I found somebody's wedding announcement from 39 years ago. And, you know, whether they want it or not, or somebody wants something like that, in a sense, it's a bit of genealogy, I guess you could say. But doing archival history searches like this, it's just wonderful. Piggybacks on the kind of stuff that I would believe are housed at the Rome Historical Society. And now that our friend Art is back in the lead chair there, that's welcome news to the community, at least I think so. The last I had heard, and I need to reconfirm this, I think they have most of the Sentinels there.
Oh, really?
But again, you'd have to have a starting point to know, you know, to pick up a paper, no different than when the paper was on microfiche, that you had to have a starting point and then circle that thing through pages and pages.
Oh, let me tell you, it used to drive me crazy. It made dizzy. Microfiche and I didn't get along.
Exactly. So now, I mean, I was even able to, I think I got pulled over in 1978. I was speeding.
And they used to put that in the paper then.
And they used to put that in the paper, and sure enough, I found it. So it's quite enlightening what we can find now. Through this resource that's available at Jervis Library. They have as I understood it, there was an agreement made so that it's not available from the outside, and understandably so.
No, I'm sure nobody would come to the library.
Yeah, so that would be the thing. Plus, it's some protections afforded to the Rome Sentinel and what they have and what they're willing to put out. Because I think you had the gentleman on a couple
weeks ago, yeah.
Right, and, Mr. you know, Waters. You know, for them to archive everything like they have in really awesome quality would probably be an expense that's, you know, just not doable in this day and age.
Now, where do you want to start? This is going to be a regular thing. I'm going to tell you, this turns out to be extremely interesting if we have a pattern. For many years when I was with another series of stations, Frank Tomano would come on regularly, and he would drag in. We had gone from the 1700s, we were in the 1920s before he started to slow down, it's tough writing a column and doing what you do. The research takes forever. So this will be very interesting as people listen in and find out little tidbits, because I found since I've come to Rome, there's a ton of history here that you really can't find anyplace. I mean, a lot of cities that I've lived in have some history, and they really tout it, naming streets and stores, and they got plaques and monuments all over the place. And sometimes you got to look and say, well, you know, really?
well, and to
here
that,
there's a ton.
It, to that point is Rome, from what, you know, I grew up in this, I was born in 57 and graduated in 76, and we were part of the Rome Urban Renewal, you know.
Oh,
and
yes,
so,
yes, that's,
so
we can talk about it, that.
Yeah, and that's part of my history, my personal history, and I was one of those that left in 1982 because what I thought was the handwriting on the wall of just the way the city was going at the time, but, you know, and I kept in touch to a certain degree, but then in 2009 I had the opportunity to start coming back on a regular basis, and I just jumped in with both feet, and I, in particular, love the history of Rome, and I love what we're doing moving forward, because I think both can go hand in hand.
Where do you want to start?
Alluding to the People and Places Facebook page, a lot of times you'll get people asking about the Revere sign and the fact that it is not lit, And I don't get into the whys and why not that they haven't relit it. Obviously, that's probably in greater terms, the amount to relay it would be astronomical. Some of us believe there's other ways, but that, you know, that's up to the folks at Revere. I did want to let people know that that sign, the Revere copper brass sign with the Paul Revere on the horse, came to Rome in 1951. September 1951 is when it was first lit, and you being of electrical mind, the sign originally, as I understand it, 6,000 watts. Now, I don't...
Oh, that would burn. That would burn a lot of electricity.
So, you know, that, and that's probably a lot of neon up there and a lot of electricity, you know, and, again, some of us believe that it could be done...
Were they neon or bulbs?
No, it was neon.
Neon.
Yeah, okay. It was neon. And they used, evidently, I took some time. It was commemorating the 150th anniversary of the copper industry, not of Revere, but of the founding of the copper industry.
Oh.
So now, does that go back to Revere being the that's something I'm not sure of. I can't speak to that specific. The sign, though, in the times that I was growing up, yes, was our beacon to the city. Now, even if it was lit, I don't think we could see it from the
trees,
East Rome arterial. That's called trees, and nobody, you know, oftentimes people don't think of that. Now there's just, it can't be seen. No different than the, you know, I'm one that enjoy the signage, the water tower being lit down at Bellamy Harbor. I like that. That's just something I enjoy that. The tower's old. I happened to find for some folks that the tower was originally built in 1936. Nobody could find the information. I just kept digging.
I know,
it's
that old, really.
Yeah, and I kept digging and kept digging, and I finally came up with the information, again, from the Sentinel Archives, that tower was constructed. It was actually the second construction. There had been a smaller tower, and then it was enlarged with General Cable. The Revere sign, as it sits now, the unlit Revere sign, 44 feet long, 24 and a half feet tall, and the structure comes in at 15 tons.
Jeez.
So that's a lot of it's a lot of steel up there. And that entire lighting back in September 1951, there was 25,000 people in Rome.
They came to see it lit?
To come and participate, let's say, not necessarily for the lighting, to come and participate in the 150th anniversary of the founding of the copper industry. And I have found other things, and I'll allude to them in Lou's future editions of Lou's Local Lore, where they've had reenactments of Fort Stanwix at the Mohawk Acre Shopping Center.
Really?
That 25 to 30,000 people attended. And it's an amazing thing. Now, you know, will we get there? That's not really for us to say. You know, at some point in time, another generation, you know, will have an influx. And I know how you are on the influx of tourists coming to the Griffith International Airport.
Oh, listen, I can't even get home during rush hour anymore.
So I look at that, you know, one day you'll never know, you know, we'll never know, but we keep making great strides.
This area has, coming back from what it was, sometimes it stumbles, and please pick at me. I'm thinking of the 200th anniversary of the Erie Canal, which we decided not to hold on the 200th anniversary of the Erie Canal because it's better to just shift it so that everybody's surprised that you hold it a week or two later. Wait till you see me work on Christmas this year.
I'm not entirely sure how that played out. I was just happy to attend. Those are the kind of things
that make an area nice.
Yeah, that do. I'm one of those that I use the canals. I use the trail system. I think Rick told you the other morning.
Yeah.
I was out at 5:30.
You can bike it, yeah.
Ride and bike at 5:30 in the morning. My friend Chris Gardello and I. But we like to do that. We make use of it. But I'm not opposed to chiming into the Canal Authority. You know, they've had a couple of trees in the water over there that have been there for a year and a half that they haven't taken out. And then the city says, well, that's the Canal Authority. Canal Authority says, well, the local authority can do it. The local authority will say, well, if it's safe, we'll do it. You know, and I'm like, well, take a grappling hook, throw it out there, tie it to a fire truck, and pull the trees out.
Oh,
you know,
geez.
That's what I guess.
Yeah.
Simplicity is just not in, you know, it's just not the way to go, I guess, at times. But that's fair enough. And I'm also vocal at city council from time to time.
That, you laid that down. I don't know if you wanted to.
Yeah, that's my
wasn't
second.
Wasn't that some sort of extremely controversial thing?
Rick, Rocco's pointing to my information. This was the second part of Lou's local lore. We doing okay on time?
Yep.
All right. This is the second one. This one's real near and dear to my heart. And Rick Rocco was pointing to the Capitoline wolf, otherwise known in Rome as the Roman wolf. And the Roman wolf
Romulus
and Remus.
Yep.
That's correct. The Roman wolf celebrates 60 years in Rome this coming November 2nd.
Oh, it's been here that long.
1958, November 2nd, 1958. My father, Frank Taverna, and Lou Dinello were the two leads. My dad was the chairman, and that's why it's near and dear to my heart. Most people are familiar with the beaches, but if they're not, in the front of the beaches is the statue. It's in Italy, it'd be called the Capitoline wolf. Here we call it the Roman wolf. And it was laid at the beaches in November of 1958. And it did not come to Rome very easily.
Yeah.
the project started. My mom is still with us, fortunately. She tried to stay out of it because she was pregnant with me at the time. I was born a month after the statue was formally put at the beaches. So she said she was busy with her own projects and let my dad do his thing. And back in August of 1957, evidently this gentleman reached out from Italy. His name was Alfonso Felici. And Alfonso is known as the Fighting Paisano. And he has quite a past of fighting in various wars, and he was with the U.S. services at some point in time. And he happened to have this statue and reached out to Rome, being the sisterly city, and he wanted to trade the statue for a snowplow blade.
You're kidding.
This is how it started out, yeah, when you delve into this stuff. And I don't know how my dad got on the committee originally. My mom couldn't fill me in. I couldn't find out why my dad was named chairman to the committee. It happened that way. Lou Dinello, Lou Dinello Sr., who has passed, is my godfather. So I have that connection with that particular family. Well, and make a long story short, the statue, eventually, once they made the decision that they wanted to bring it to Rome, you were right, the city council didn't want to have anything of it because they thought it was obscene in that day and age, I guess. But my dad, he kabarost, hardhead, he pressed on the Dinellos. Eventually they involved the Destitos. Originally the statue was going to go on public property in Rome, and that was part of the problem. Mayor Herbst at the time didn't want to have any part of it. My dad went before city council a number of times and argued. And then, and my dad was a school teacher at the time.
The historical significance didn't seem to stick with anybody.
Well, they took the snowplow blade out of the equation. So eventually, it was just to get the statue here. It was going to cost about $1,500, and I'm sure in that day and age, that was a lot of money that they raised,
sure,
to get that here. And the gentleman, Alfonso Felici, wanted to come along with it. He had a problem. He had been deported twice from the U.S., and the part of the problem was the citizenry thought that he was using this as a ploy to come to the U.S. again. And the mayor didn't want to have any part of paying for this guy's dinner.
Isn't that interesting? And that is an interesting.
Yeah,
I think this Lou's local lore is going to be a big deal. So I am really encouraged. Things like that are perfect.
Yeah, I get a kick out of it, especially to pertain to my family. And eventually, what happened was the Destitos were good friends with a lot of people from the beaches. And I'm sure my dad was one that frequented the beaches at the time for a number of reasons. And they offered the plot of land that you saw in that picture, Rocco.
Yeah,
they offered that plot of land out front. They take care of it. We don't have to do a thing. You know. So I've been in conversation, just initial conversations, to see if we could possibly have a little dedication somewheres, like you said, around the 60th anniversary of it being here. It's quite historical from that sense, if you're into that. You know, and a lot of people walk by it, never recognize what it is. It's for my family. We're very proud. Our names are on the plaque on the front, so we have living history, so to speak. And I wasn't even born when it was placed, so it's very cool.
Well, that was a huge issue, because I understand the biggest issue back at that time was they were going to decide between this statue or a statue of you in front of the beaches with a cigar saluting the city of Rome and making a big deal of it, but you weren't born yet.
So exactly.
They decided to do this. Lou, it's great to have you on. We've got a few more minutes.
Okay,
and then
very
Bobby
good.
O'Brien
I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
Maybe we could talk about it in the future, because there are many things here that are a mystery to me. There's this large concrete-looking statue of what looks like G.I. Joe with a stiff neck in the Griffith International Airport.
Alley-oop.
Alley-oop, yeah.
Alley-oop. I'd love to see that moved, by the way. I would love to see it out near the aircraft.
Now, alley-oop is one of those, I haven't delved into it like some people have. Other people have jumped on the bandwagon to find out
His
about it.
His name is Alley-oop?
Alley-oop, yes, I understand it, yeah. And it's just something I haven't really gotten into, that particular aspect of it. Things like this that have dates that go back. Now, alley-oop was gone for a while, I guess. And
it was in the woods. It was in the
woods
for many,
many years.
Then
it was found.
Yeah, they found it, and they kind of rehabbed it, and they moved it. But I would love to see them move it again right near the aircraft. I think alley-oop out there near the aircraft, right near the road, would be perfect.
You know, I found a relic of a transmitter station. I was riding down Muck Road, and lo and behold, Rick Welts tells me
That's her.
We ride out there, but if you take, like, when I venture the trails, I look at historical markers if they're around, something of that nature. But it just, for some reason, it piques a curiosity in me as to what the background is on it, other than the sign just being placed there. And since we live along the remnants of the Black River Canal, I fish in Northwestern frequently. And there are remnants of the canal right through that particular area, Northwestern. I wish we would open it up and make it, but, you know, it runs through private farmland now, so that's up to those people. But I fish in areas where there's called public fishing rights. Well, I thought maybe we could adapt some of that public whatever it is to opening up. But, again, it, you know, involves funding. Who's going to take care of these historical
features? You have to make noise, and then somebody brings you money.
Well, and that's the thing. And I'm sure it, you know, and the price point for it is considerably high. But every day I'm reminded, you know, you're driving along there, and there's a piece of history. You go up through the Boonville Gorge.
There's a ton of it here.
You know, that just open eyes. And now, down the road, will people come to, you know, the Rocco? I admit it on the air. I've never been to Fort Stanwix. I've never been to the fort.
Well, it's like that when you're in your own backyard.
But I should be, and I'm ashamed that I haven't been. But, you know, and people have said, well, I'll take you by the hand and we'll go over there. Well, but I haven't. But it's fascinating.
It is.
Yeah, and I've seen the background information on the fort. That fort's going to be here without them having to do anything. The way they constructed it, evidently, we saw some materials that the Historical Society presented. That fort could 200 years before they have to do anything.
Rome also has what they call the Erie Canal Village, which is representative of what happens when a village is abandoned for hundreds of years and left to fall down. You should see that, too. It's a great
very
plus.
True. And I know, because, you know, again, back in the 70s when things were happening in Rome, and again, as I'm part of urban renewal, to see some of the facades go down to the buildings, you know, that at this point in time, it is what it is. You know, that...
Oh, I love you.
There's just... I saw you...
It's very hard to draw into something. I'll figure it out.
Well, and no, because, I mean, my grandfather passed on the American Corner. But it's not there.
I never knew that it was called. I only heard that term maybe six weeks ago when it was started.
So should I be putting flowers there, every December to honor my grandfather?
Well, if it was called the American Corner because something happened there or there's something there under that ground, a little plaque. You do go to some cities where they got too many plaques, but your history, you can't put a shovel in the ground anywhere near in that area without possibly finding something. So if that was the American Corner for a reason, I don't think there's anything wrong with acknowledging it. I was told afterward that it was called the American Corner because that was where the building started going up for the Freedom Plaza or some of that bridge. And
it was the American Corner going back many years.
Then it must really mean something to somebody. Yeah, I was here in the days of the bridge, the living bridge, Freedom Plaza as it's known.
Right.
Walked across the living bridge, spent money in the living bridge. We went to the kiosks that were in the old downtown. I don't know if you were familiar with the old downtown.
I've seen many pictures.
Yeah, and so we had an assortment of things that were part of urban renewal, and they're gone. Okay, and we're going to try something new. That's all.
Well, maybe one of your local lures can focus in on the American Corner and the significance.
Good point. Yeah.
We have run out of time. I want to thank Lou Taverna for coming in, and he will be back.
Thank you for having me.
No, this is going to be a lot of fun, and I think for people who like to know about Rome's history and just can't find it, this is going to be great. And I thank you for coming in. And Bobby O'Brien will be coming up next. You've got to take a break and pay some bills. We'll be back after these messages.
Hi, I'm Avina. I'm 7 years old and I'm blind. I love gymnastics, piano, public speaking, and riding on the trail bike with my dad. You can help me live the life I want.
Help Ravina and other blind people by making a tax-deductible donation of your used car, truck, or almost anything with wheels to the National Federation of the Blind. Your donation will ensure a brighter future for blind children and